This podcast episode is powered by AfriPods, the world's number one podcasting platform for African stories.
Welcome to Rooted and Robust Podcast.
Everyone, welcome to another exciting episode of Rooted and Robust Podcast. This is the show that inspires, informs, educates, and spurs you to cultivate the skills you need for your desired goals and success. Now, something interesting about today's episode is, you know, it deals with something we all like to talk about, money. All right. Now, I remember a book I read several years ago called The Five Love Languages. It just tells me that every single thing has a language, right? And today we are looking at the language of money, the language of money. So I have a guest on the show today, as usual. And we're going to discuss money today. So I brought the money man himself. So welcome, Innocent Ndwaguba. Welcome on the show. Thank you for joining me today.
Wow. Thank you so much, Uzoma. I'm grateful. I'm honored. And I've got to say this, that you are amongst the few people who pronounce my son name very correctly. Oh. Yeah. Like, I don't know why people... Did you practice?
I did a little bit of practice.
Okay, wow. That's like people miss that name. I don't know why people miss it, but I really thank you for pronouncing it correctly. It means a lot to me. So I've got to say this. Also, I've listened to your podcast. You're doing an amazing job. Like, thank I've you. Got to be frank with you. I took my time to listen. I even listened today, I must be honest.
So wow.
I want to tell you that I admire your tenacity, your consistency. So please keep up the good work.
I've
gained value from your work.
Thank you.
And I believe millions of individuals around the globe will also someday enjoy your works as well.
Wow, thank you so much. That is so heartwarming. Thank you.
My pleasure.
You're a cryptocurrency enthusiast, you are a serial entrepreneur, you have a lot of years of experience in sales and a lot of things. So aside these things we know about you, what are the other things we really don't know about you?
Okay, I read a lot. I'm an indoor person. I love to spend time reading, doing lots of research, seeing courses, like taking courses, of course, trading the financial market. But I love to cook. I've stayed with my sister, so I learned how to cook from them. And what else? I think that's it.
Now, I know you have a community where you are doing so well, the Money Academy group, right? Tell us about the Money Academy. What inspired that community?
Okay, so lots of individuals, especially young people, know very little about money. And it's not just young people, because if this is how it works, okay, if someone knows something, say a parent knows something or how to make money well, you know, he or she would do well to teach his or her child, right?
Yeah.
And this would also ensure that these individuals would in turn make money genuinely for themselves.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
But because most of our parents don't know how money works very well because of, say, different ideologies and philosophies, teachings they've gotten with regards to money, and some of the mindsets that have been passed down to them from their own parents as well, you know, they've not taken time to learn about money, right? So they've also in some way, subconsciously, I must say, passed down these teachings and mindsets to their kids or to us. Okay.
Mm.
And we've collected these things. I felt the need to start a community to really educate people, bring up good business ideas that people can, you know, get involved in, share knowledge, share insights. And it's been really amazing because it was in May or June we launched, and boom, It's I thank God. I really thank God.
Congrats. Well done.
Thank you.
Oh, the language of money. This is exciting. Like, I really want to hear things about this one. I have my pen and paper ready, so I'm just going to let you take it on from here. So tell us, what do we need to know about money, and what kind of language does money understand? So let's get into it. It's over to you, Innocent. So take it on from here.
All right. Okay. Thank you, Uzi.
Yeah.
So, and I really thank God you've read that book, Have Five Love Languages, because it will give me a foundation to really buttress my point. So, I haven't read that book, but I've had friends who are like, you know, say, what's your love language? My love language is this. So, we are young folks, right?
Yeah.
So, say as a young man now, I want to ask a lady out, or before I even ask a lady out, it would be very wise for me to even understand and get to know her. So, and also try my best to speak in a language that she would understand.
True.
So I'll do well to not say see when she's more of a hear person, you know. So I would say stuff like, have you heard what happened yesterday? Instead of see what happened yesterday, you get. I would try to use words that appeal mostly to her, because I believe she should clearly understand the message I'm trying to pass across. That is one. Two, if I come up here and I start to speak Hausa, and most folks here, people who are listening, don't understand Hausa language, it will be very difficult for the message I'm trying to pass across to get to them.
Sure.
Because communication is a two-way thing, right?
Yeah.
It's a two-way thing. Also, I studied physics back in school, and if a fellow physicist is here, if I'm conversing with him, there are terminologies I would use, there are vocabularies I would use, and he would clearly understand the message. If a medical doctor also is conversing with the medical doctor, there are terms and languages they would use, terminologies they would use to converse with themselves, and they would clearly understand what each other is trying to say. So also it is for money as well. Right, so people start out, everyone wants to make money. Have you seen anyone who comes out and clearly says, hey, I don't want money?
Nope. Nobody.
But no one says this verbatim or clearly, but their actions portray this. Right, just like the analogy I gave of trying to ask a lady out or befriend the lady without me speaking in her language, in the language I believe she understands clearly, it's gonna be difficult for her to get in tune or in the same frequency with me. So also it is when folks have not understood the language of money and they try to get money, they try to make money, it's really gonna be difficult, right? Because they are not speaking the language which that money understands. Right, they are not speaking the language. So the first thing an individual should do is learn the language of money. Right. And I love to say this, we are all metaphorical blank slates, okay? We are all empty. And every language, I think I took Igbo in school, and one thing the teacher was saying was, Asusuaburu ebumputuwa, Asusubuyehe anamuam. She was saying, a language is not something we came into the world with. Languages are learned. Right, so you learn Igbo language, you learn Hausa. One of the things I'm trying to do now is to learn Yoruba, because I don't know how to speak it. Right, so also if one has looked at one's life and has seen that I know very little about money, or I'm making very little money, something should tell that individual that, oh, it's simply because I'm not speaking or I don't understand the language of money. So that individual should do well to start learning the language. And with every language, there are vocabularies, there are terminologies that are associated with each language. So for us to delve deep into this, I'll be taking us back to how this money of its thing even started, because, you know, it's really good to look back at history or look backward. If you're able to look backward, you'll be able to know what lies ahead, okay? Because the secrets of the future lies very much in the past. So I'll be taking us back to history, and we'll be doing this in 5 steps. So the first thing I want to talk about here is the hunters or gatherers age. You see, at some point, this thing we call money, and people need to understand that there is a difference between money and currency. Okay, I'll be giving us the definition of money as we progress into the show. But like I said, The first thing I want to make reference to here is hunters / gatherers age. Because if back in the days, if you had given those who were hunters then, say, $1 million, they wouldn't have done so much with it back then, because there was nothing to purchase with that kind of money.
Yeah.
Okay, there was nothing to purchase with that kind of money. Rather, for them, the money they had at the time was their skill and energy, right? Mm-hmm. The skill to hunt and to gather these animals, to eat them, prepare them. This is the money they had at the time, and they could exchange it for what they want, mm-hmm. right? And we moved on from there because these individuals found out that, wow, we could plant crops and these crops grew. You know, we could plant food and all of that. And then we moved from the hunters or gatherers age to the agrarian age, mm-hmm. right? So at this point, people started planting crops, started planting food. So I would plant maize, you could plant yam, and that person could plant cassava and all of that. And, you know, when individuals noticed that, wow, the more I planted, the richer I become. Mm-hmm. So men started marrying more wives, mm-hmm. so that they would have more children.
Yeah.
Yes, and these children would work on their plantations, you know. So this is one of the reasons why we've got polygamy now, because people wanted so many individuals to work on their farmland. Mm-hmm. And also, not just individuals, kings, barons, people who were in charge of territories, okay? They were also marrying wives, giving birth. And apart from giving birth to their own kids, they noticed that, wow, we could get other people to come in our farmland or in our plantation and do these things for us. So that's how, you know, slavery came about, right? So they started buying people to come into their farmlands to farm, produce crop, maize, yam, and all of these things. But, you know, if I'm a baron now in, Anambra, let me say I'm a king in Anambra State, and I have planted 2 bars of yam, and you are a baroness in, or let's say you're a queen in Kano, and you've planted beans. You can't continue eating beans forever,
yeah.
right? You can't continue eating beans forever. And personally, I can't continue eating 2 bars of yam. I would need to, you know, variety is the spice of life. People want mm-hmm. to have different taste of things and all of that. So it got to a point where I was dissatisfied with, you know, what I had, and I wanted to have what you have. And you also, you wanted to have what I want, possibly, right? This is a probability. So trade by barter came in, okay? Mm-hmm. So we had trade by barter, and we started exchanging goods through trade by barter. But there were lots of challenges. There were lots of challenges because what if I had yam and you had beans, and then what you wanted for your beans was rice, and I wasn't having rice? Mm-hmm. You start looking for someone else who had rice. Okay, so these are some of the challenges. And even if you've gotten someone who had rice, there was no system of measurements that would really say the value you are giving, the value you are exchanging for my rice yeah. is what the value I should give you for your beans.
It's true.
So we started with these disparities. And one thing you would understand with humans is we're always looking for solution. Mm-hmm. We're always looking to advance. We're always looking to break barriers. We're always looking to do things differently. We're always looking to get better. So, you know, we had, why trade by barter came in to solve that problem of spice, you getting, you not just having only what you have, but you being able to have other things. While it came in, also brought its own challenges. Things like is the weight of what you are giving me equal to the weight of what I'm giving you?
Sure, yeah.
You know, how am I also going to find someone who has what I want mm-hmm. and wants what I have, you see? And also the cost of transportation. I needed to transport what I have. So imagine moving from Anambra State to Kano mm. and then even getting there, I would now find out that, Omo, this queen, what I have is not what the queen needs. Mm-hmm. And what you get? So these were some of the challenges. And then we have problem of storage. So let's say my plantation is a plantation where I have orange trees and lots of orange fruits. It was difficult to preserve these oranges. It would be difficult to preserve tomatoes, say if my plantation was that rich, you know, I was planting tomato in. Mm-hmm. So industrialization came in to solve some of those problems, right? Especially the problem of storage. So we could turn tomatoes into tomato paste. We could turn orange into orange juice. We could turn mangoes into mango juice. We could turn yam. So we could turn all of these in, and we could change, you know, the nature of the meal into something that would stay for longer without getting bad. Right. So industrialization came in to solve this problem. But industrialization came with its own problem as well. Mm-hmm. Right. So we've gone from, just to give us a summary of how far we've gotten or we've come so far. We've talked about the hunter slash gatherer stage, we've talked about the agrarian age, we've talked about trade by barter, and we're talking about the industrial age. Right, yeah. So at this point, we started, you know, to preserve our meal. We had cars, we had machines, all of this. So if you observe, they've solved most of the problem that came with trade by barter. Mm-hmm. But we also needed a means to exchange these products and services. So we started using precious metals. You know, we started using precious metals to trade these commodities. The major one we were using then was gold. Let's say I'm a merchant, I'm a big time businessman in Abuja, and this industry is in, say, Ogun State, right? Mm-hmm. For me to travel from Abuja to Ogun State with my gold is a very risky thing to do, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
It's very, very risky, because considering the weight, because 1 troy ounce is equal to 31 grams. Gold is weighty, as we know. So for me to carry gold this weighty, and you know, that is equal to the value of what I want to purchase, to be very weighty, and the risks of doing it as well, because I could be met with, you know, who knows what will happen to me along the road, yeah. Robbers, you know. So we had people we call gold keepers. We had people who call gold keepers. So these gold keepers were stationed in different parts of the world at the time, and they would collect your gold. So let's say I had 100 troy ounce of gold. So I would go to this gold keeper, and I would give him this 100 troy ounce of gold, and he would collect it and give promissory notes. Now on this promissory notes, he would say something like, "Innocent Ndo Aguba has got X amount of gold in my possession," right? So he can purchase goods or pay for services worth this amount. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that solved the problem of traveling with something that's weighty and something that people could easily, you know, collect from you, right? Yeah. But at some point, as we advanced, these gold keepers came together, right? It came together. And you know, the forefront of industrialization, big business, was the US. Mm-hmm. Right? So it was in the United States most of these things really happened. So these gold keepers decided to come together and keep this gold somewhere, right? And so we call this place the Federal Reserve. Mm-hmm. Right? Because they've kept this gold somewhere, there was a need to tender something that had an equivalent amount of gold stored in the Federal Reserve. And that is how paper money came about. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's how paper money, this paper money we use today, came about. Then, back then, because it's no longer the case now, back then, for every gold that is stored in the Federal Reserve, we had an equivalent amount of dollar in circulation. Mm-hmm. Okay, so if we had $100 in circulation in the economy, we had 100 gold kind of stored in the Federal Reserve, yeah. Right? Mm-hmm. But something happened. President Richard Nixon, I hope I pronounced that correctly, a citizen of the United States, please pardon us. On the 15th of August, 1971, he removed the dollar from the gold standard. The U.S. economy was suffering big time. They were fighting wars with different countries. So much was happening. He was the president at the time. Lots of scandal in his administration. One thing you know is this: dollar was pegged to gold, and every currency of the world was pegged to dollar. So when he removed the dollar from the gold standard, it had a spiral effect against every other currency of the world. So immediately he did this, the United States government could print as much money as they wanted. Right? So there was no reference point again. They could now print as much money as possible. This is what happens. When money is printed this way, it means you are bringing in money from somewhere into an economy. Right, so you are devaluing the current money that is already circulating in the economy, because for you to make more money, you need to do more business, you need to sell more stuff, right? But they were not selling more stuff, they were just printing money and injecting it into the economy, right? So we had more money trying to purchase and service goods that we had not done enough to improve or to increase, right? So let's say we had 10 goods and services, for instance, and we've now printed, and we had $10 that we are servicing that we could exchange for these goods and services. But we've gone ahead to print, say, $3 more, and we've injected it into the economy. So now we have $13 trying to service goods and services. Yes, the same number. It's going to devalue the dollar or the money in the economy, right? It wasn't a good thing, and it had spiral effects against every other currency. So other governments of the world started doing the same. Think about this, going to save 37,000 naira in the bank in 2020, right? That would be able to purchase for me $100. But come this year, two years later, it won't be able to buy me, $100. In fact, it's almost double. I have really studied trend, read lots of books, and I developed a blueprint. I call this the no-fail strategy for becoming rich alive, right? I call it TOMS. I read this book. One of the books that really sparked my imagination was this book titled Why A Students Work for C Students and B Students Work for the Government. That book was titled by Robert Kiyosaki. Rich men, rich people don't save money. Rich people don't save. Rather, they make their money work for them. Do you know why banks are very rich? Because they owe so many people money. Look at insurance companies, right? If you know how to use OPN, you know how to use other people's money, you'll do very well. Banks collect our money, and they give us a sense of, you know, security and protection, and then they keep our money and they use our money to do business, right? That is why banks, you see Zenith Bank, UBA Bank, all of those guys, you see insurance companies, because we give them our money and they give us a sense of protection. It means for our money to be in their possession, it means they owe us, isn't it? Yeah. So they owe millions of people. So they use this money to do other business. They give it out to people in terms of loans, grants, not grants, loans basically. They also do other investments for themselves, as of course banks have got their own investment arms. Yeah. And they use our money and they don't even give us a return on investment, right? They don't give us that. Rather, they even charge us for their services.
Yeah.
Yes, they do this. Right? That is why saving is bad. So you go save your money in the bank, and the banks take your money and use your money to do business, and they even charge you for giving them your money, and they don't even give you anything. So you need to look for ways, and I'll be sharing with us some of the vital ways, some of the things to do, you know, to really be among the top 1% of folks who really know how to play the money. We've got good debt and bad debt. A good debt is a debt you use to fund an asset. An asset is something that brings in money. But a bad debt is something that you use to fund a liability. Liability is something that takes money off you. Now, we've moved from the industrial age to where we are now, which is the paper money, and then we've gone from paper money to the information and technological age. You know, currently I pay for services, people pay me too for my services, for my products, without even seeing me, right? All they need to do is to do bank transfers, right? And I get my money wherever I am, right? So you see, we are going cashless, and that is why people should start looking into cryptocurrency very quickly. If you've seen how, that's why I took us through, you know, the evolution of money, help us to see how money has been different things at time, because for you to really make money, you need to understand what money is at a particular time. Let me not say what money is. Let me say what currency is per time so that you can make tons of it. So someone who was in the Gadras, if you had given him $1 million, that would be worthless to him at the time, right? But if you had given him something that would boost his energy, something that would sharpen his skill, his hunting skill, the energy he needs to hunt more animals, then that would be very, very beneficial to him. Okay, so we've evolved and we'll continue evolving. Currently, quite frankly, most of the services, most of the products, most of the things I pay for them without even touching money, mm-hmm. right? We're going cashless. So we're even going away from this paper money. We've got PayPal, we've got Flutterwave, we've got Paystack. All of these services help us go cashless. And right now, we're having different exchanges, that's crypto exchanges. We've got Binance, we've got Bybit, we've got Bydex, so many of them in the crypto space. And we've got lots of cryptocurrencies. Okay, so people should start looking into these areas. You know, Michael Saylor wrote a book, the founder of MicroStrategy. He wrote a book, and in that book, he was talking about the materialization of materials. He was talking about the fact that you can hold a whole library in your phone. You can hold the whole library in your phone. You know, we've been able to dematerialize things and make them smaller such that we can carry them. So I can carry $1 billion worth of cryptocurrency in my phone and nobody knows. You remember when we talked about gold, we talked about the fact that because these business people were trying to ensure they were secure, they didn't want to carry something that was so weighty, they had to give them to the gold keepers. Mm-hmm. So right now, you can carry $1 million and nobody would even know that you're carrying such kind of money. And you'll be carrying this in your phone, you can be carrying this in your crypto wallet, you can be having this in your bank account, and nobody knows, you're just moving. So we've been able to dematerialize these things. We are evolving, we're advancing. Since we are doing that, the thing we use to pay for goods and services also has to evolve as well. Mm-hmm. Right, so I encourage listeners to start learning about cryptocurrency. So now, to wrap this up, I'll be giving us a definition of money. I'll be giving us two definitions of money, actually. One is that money is a medium through which value is exchanged. Mm-hmm. Money is a medium through which value is exchanged. So while currency is limited, money is unlimited. So Naira is a currency, dollar is a currency. I have a dollar in my room now, but if I go to any local store around where I am now, I won't be able to make any purchase. I won't be able to make any reasonable purchase. Why? Because those guys or the people they might not even know that this is dollar.
Yeah.
Right? What they know is Naira. What they're very familiar with is Naira. But if I go to the US now and I take Naira to them and I try to buy something, they'll be like, what is this? Right? While currency has geographical limitations, money has no limits at all, right? If you see money from the point of value, then all you need to do is to become a person of value. And one of the things Ozi has been doing so well to do in this her platform is to build people of value. She brings in people of value to share valuable information that once you get, you listen to, you become a person of value also, and you can make money anywhere you are.
True.
So Ozi, you're doing a fantastic job.
Thank you.
You're doing a fantastic. And also, money is a reward for solving problems.
Mm-hmm.
Money is a reward for solving problems. So you go to anywhere in the world, go to China, and you can solve problem there. They'll give you money. Go to Japan, solve problem. Go to the UK, solve problems there. They'll give you money. So what you want to do is to go after becoming a person that can solve problems. Big problems equal big money.
Mm-hmm.
Big problems equal big money. And for you to be able to solve big problems, you must have, you know, acquired high income skills. Mm-hmm. Right? And this is where I will talk about something that I had made reference to earlier in this show, the triangle of money success. The first is a skill. The mm-hmm. first part of the triangle is a skill. And I want to buttress it before going to the second part of the triangle. So you need a skill for you to solve these problems that will bring in money for you. And there are lots of skills out there, but if you talk about the fact that big problems equal big money, so if you want to solve big problems, you need to learn high income skills.
Yeah.
So take, for instance, Ozi is a podcaster, right? So she's got this podcasting skill. One other thing she can do is to take this skill and turn it into a business, right? So she's going to, and this business is easily scalable. So for me, I made a mistake of starting a business that wasn't scalable. I went into a production business. So I was the producer, I was the packager, I was the sales rep, I was the marketer. Oh my God, it was daunting. I was making sales, right? I was making sales, but the money I was making was not enough to hedge against Naira falling. So Naira was greatly falling down in value against dollar. And you know that virtually all the things we do in Nigeria, we import them. Virtually everything in this country, we import them. So for me to go into a production business was against, I was going against the economy. I understood that, yes, I needed to build businesses. I was going against the economy, and that is why it really crippled me. I had to run. So the next thing you do is to, you know, build a business from your skill. You build a scalable business. So for instance, the Money Academy is scalable. I can be in any part of the world and I'll be building the Money Academy. And with time, one of the things we'll be doing is to roll out different programs, right? So these things are all scalable. We're selling digital products. All of these things are just to produce it once and we get to sell it over and over again. It is information that ensures your transformation. And as the world evolves, new things come up per time, right? New things come up at times. So you need to stay abreast. You need to keep updating yourself. You need to be in the know. If you're not in the know, then you'll be outdated, right? You need to be in the know of what's currently happening. If not, you would be outdated. So now you've gotten a skill. You've turned that into a business. A business is now where you've involved different individuals, right? Where you've involved different individuals. You now have a team. So for instance, Ozzy would have someone who is doing the editing, someone who is doing the publishing, someone who is, you know, removing noise and all of this. And so it becomes a business. She starts to host big people and stuff like that. So she's turned that into a business and she's going to take money from her skill to fund her business. So she doesn't need to go take loans, right? She doesn't need to go take loans. She would use the money she's making from her skill to fund her business. And one thing about skill is your skill would keep going up your skill would keep ascending. So as you keep getting better in your skill, you keep earning more. But the thing with business is business gives you leverage, right? You could leverage others. You leverage other people's time, other people's effort, other people's energy. But, you know, as we are bringing in different people, you need to understand that sometimes they're going to put in more energy, other times they're going to put in less energy. And these things are going to affect your business as well. So your business would have down times and good times. It will have uptrends and downtrends, but it's still best. It's still very important. But so your skill, the difference is your skill keeps growing up, it keeps getting better. So learn a skill, turn that skill, have a business, and then the next part will be investment. So what I teach people to see cryptocurrency as an investment, because the thing is, cryptocurrency can turn your 100,000 naira into 2 million naira in less than 2 months. As it can do that for you, it can also take your 2 million naira to 100k as well.
Yeah.
So it can give you so much money, but it can also take so much money away from you. So what you need is to have something that keeps bringing in money for you. Then you put that thing into a business, you say 10x it, and then you take that stuff, your profits, you put it into the investment, which is cryptocurrency, and cryptocurrency gives you tons, boatload of money. Right. So if you go with this triangle, skill, business, investment, you see that, man, you're not going to lose funds.
Wow. Thank you, Innocent. Thank you so much. Like, we went from before, we got to now, and we're looking at the future. So it's so packed. And I am so thankful that you honored the invitation. Thank you.
My pleasure. Pleasure.
Yeah. Before we call it a day, I want to quickly... you have an academy, and people that want to be a part of this, how do they get in touch with you? Is it on Facebook? How does it work?
Okay, great. All you need to do to join is just to search for the Money Academy on Facebook, and that's it. You're there. You're going to gain value from different people. Just search for TMA on Facebook.
And join the academy. Thank you so much. Thank you, Innocent. Thank you for joining us today. Thank you.
Pleasure. The pleasure is mine. Thank you for having me here.
All right.
I'm glad to share my knowledge with the people of this platform.
Yeah, thank you. We are glad to have you. Have a good day. Have a good one.
I shall. You too. Bye.
Bye. The language of money. Something amazing that Innocent shared was the triangle of money, right? The money triangle. Learn a skill, then build a business from that skill and invest your profits. That is very amazing. So the first thing you do is go learn a skill. That's like the basis of it all. So I am sure you got value from this episode. This has been Rooted and Robust Podcast. My name is Ozioma Anioji, and I will talk to you next week. Don't forget, keep being amazing. Bye-bye.
Ina Indeshwa na AfriPods.